Hello and welcome to another author event at the Voice and Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and we're delighted to welcome those in the audience and those tuning in virtually to what I think is going to be a truly fabulous event with one of my favorite authors, Christina Dodd.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Christina's here with her new book, Forget What You Know. For those tuning in, if you'd like a signed copy, we do still have a very small number left signed by Christina. So if you'd like one, please go online to the Poison Pen or give us a call, and we can connect you with what I think is one of the best books of 2023. Now I'd like to welcome Christina.
Thank you, John.
I'm glad to be here.
I love the Poison Pen.
We love you, too. Now for the tough questions. I'll be Maury Saker. You'll be the squirming CEO.
Oh, yeah, I can do that.
Okay. Let's start with you telling us a little bit about yourself prior to becoming an author. I'm always fascinated by your career choice.
Well, I grew up reading all the time, but I thought authors were like those special people that lived on an island with a long cigarette case and the whole thing. So I went to trade school and became a drafter and designed roads, mines, and sawmills, and I didn't think I could do it. I got married, I had children, and at some point I said, I just had a baby, how hard could it be to publish a book? the other question is, how hard could it be to write a book? And basically it took me 3 completed manuscripts, 2 children, and 10 years before I was published.
And that book was Candle in the Windmill.
And it won all kinds of awards. 10 years, you eventually get pretty good at what you're doing. And my husband supported me through the whole thing. And only once said during the 10 years, if you don't get published pretty soon, you're going to have to get a job.
A real job.
A real job. Well, what a paying job is what he was concerned about. I was taking care of the kids in the house and all that, and writing every chance. When people say they don't have time to write, I'm like, I'm sorry, when you've got the little kids, and we didn't have television, so because we didn't want one, because we didn't think that was good for children, and so I was not like I was parking the kids in front of the TV and telling them to watch for hours. So you just write every time you've got a couple of minutes. If you get one page a day, you've got a book in a year. So, but you have to be ready to do this.
So that was your first book that launched your career. Your career has really gone in different directions, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, let me see. The fourth book was the book, Castles in the Air. Mm-hmm. And they did the cover, and they sent me the poster, and I went, they spelled my name right. Everything's perfect. And I was at the Romance Writers Conference, and one of the booksellers came up and said, because it was out by then, she said, did you know that the heroine has 3 hands? And I said, no, I didn't know that. So then I went down to the book room and looked at it, and it was like, oh. So then I showed it to my editor, and she was like, so that actually is what put me on the map, because, there's a million authors out there, but not very many of them have 3-handed covers.
It's still famous today. There's a book that came out in April, The Fake Fiancé, I think by Alexandria Belfort, and she mentions that book.
That's right, you sent me that.
Because the heroine is a bookseller in Seattle, so she said, this is my favorite example, and she's talking to her love interest, and I'm thinking, wow, that really does carry through the years.
Oh, yeah. People love it. They just, oh, of course, I've been very free with the information. I totally talked about it plenty, but it is amusing. And if you can find a copy, the last time I saw one selling online that was supposedly new, it was $300.
Wow. It's a shame you don't have a box of them in your basement.
No, I've only got 4. Oh. They didn't say that the print run was running out. They didn't tell me.
Oh.
And so, all of a sudden the print run's gone, and I'm going, but I don't have any books.
It's like Bitcoin for the bookseller.
Yes, it is Bitcoin for the bookseller.
Well, that brings us forward a couple of years to you're writing a new series. It's going to be set on a cruise line, and something happened, and you're plotting to a different direction.
I was writing a book on a cruise line. I think I had 100 pages done, and COVID hit, and the cruise line shut down, and we didn't, nobody knew whether they were going to open up again, so here I am sitting here with a book that I can't write. And I did literally go back into my file of ideas for great starts for historical romance, and I came up with the start for this, which is this lady rolls up on the beach dead and basically revives, and when she wakes up, she has amnesia. She doesn't know what happened to her, and that somebody's after her. Maybe that's for sure. She's after her. And that's that. And I mean, talk about writing in an emergency. That's for sure.
Really? So that was kind of like the spur of the moment, or you just kind of...
It's happened before, John. People should not pay me not to set books in their area. I wrote one book that was set in New Orleans, and my family was going to... We were in Houston. We were about to fly into New Orleans, and they canceled our flight because Katrina came in. And then I was out of book again. I was able to write that one later, though. But yeah, at that time, I was just like, I got to write my book.
But it did give you the chance to introduce readers to a really fabulous setting, Gothic. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. These books. These are set in Gothic. I'm from the Bay Area in California, and so my family was all there when I was little, and I really have fond memories of Big Sur, and it's beautiful. If you've been there, if you've driven that highway, it's unbelievably gorgeous. It's just this little two-lane highway. Washes out all the time, built along the cliffs, and there's no towns there. They won't let them build there. That would be ridiculous. But I created Gothic, and it has a legend that is when the fog goes out, it comes back with lost souls. And so there's a little bit of a mystic vibe to it, and as James says, mystic vibe. And I've enjoyed the heck out of it, but I know you don't do audiobooks, do you?
No, I'm not a fan, but that's not
me. I'm not either, yeah. So there you go. But I did a short story, a novella, and they put it in audio only. They are going to put it in ebook eventually, but I don't know when. They haven't told me. And so that's also, that one was the one I really enjoyed because I, for the first time in my life, and I have written a lot of different kinds of books, you all know that, I actually wrote a time travel. And that was a time travel. It was so much fun. It was a romance time travel. I went totally off the rails. It was like a suspense romance time travel. It had it all.
Finished Outlander, this is what you should gravitate to next. Is that
exactly right? But, you know, all of that in 100 pages, so that was fun.
Now, we call these Gothic books a series, but it's really more the setting that's the connector.
It's just a setting. But each book stands on by itself.
Your latest is Forget What You Know.
Yes.
What can you tell people about that book?
Well, for starters, when they named it, I didn't realize that I wouldn't be able to remember the title because it is Forget What You Know, and I do forget. And I'm talking about it. You know, it's like, and your next book is something. I know it's something. I'm going to read you the first little bit of it. A submerged car is pulled from the bottom of the lake. The driver has been shot in the back of the head, and no other bodies are found. Only the legendary dragon's heart remains inside. When it rises to the surface, greedy collectors from around the world gather. They'll stop at nothing to gain possession of the priceless artifact. Only one person stands in their way, and this is our heroine. She just doesn't know that she is the heir to this dragon's heart. And think the Maltese Falcon. It was a fabulous one, but you're right.
It is, and I'm saying this with all admiration, and as a reader, there's a lot going on in the book.
Yes, there is a lot going on.
How do you keep all of those elements, all those plates spinning?
I try not to put too much in them. I think you know, if you could start at the beginning and go straight and there's no sidetracks, that's really, really good. But sometimes to build the characters so that they are likable, the characters you want to be likable, you actually have to add a little bit more to the plot, and that was what happened. This one. I knew where my heroine was, but my hero had to have something going on.
And you chose pro wrestling?
Well, he's a pro wrestler. He is a pro wrestler. But no, he's got something going on underneath that. And that's what, that was where I had the difficulties.
A lot of times readers don't think that writers who do fiction have to do research. But they do. Yeah. You just sit there and make it up, and then everything is a book. But there is a lot of research involved in writing a novel. And can you talk a little bit about what you had to learn for Forget What You Know?
For Pointless Scene, I'm very clear on what was happening with our hero and how he made a living in this very remote spot. And that was, you know, during COVID. But then I didn't know what my heroine was going to do in this remote spot. So I got on Facebook. I do this all the time. We have Facebook people here. They know that I ask questions. And I said, if you work remotely, what did you do or what do you do? And there was a list of the most fascinating careers you could imagine. I put it in a notebook. I mean, I've got all of them down. You're going to see them popping up occasionally. But one of the people said flower breeder. And I was at that time reading Flower Confidential by
Amy Stewart Gardner.
Yes, okay.
Or Amy Stewart. Stewart or something like
that. Yeah, something like that. I think it's just Stewart, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Amy Stewart. Yeah.
And I was really caught up with the flower breeder thing, and I thought this would be really interesting, and it definitely was interesting to write. And if you ever get a chance, if you're in San Francisco, go to the flower market. It's apparently just unbelievably large and wonderful, and the place to be. They open at 2 a.m. in the morning. I think it's 2 a.m. Don't call me on anything. For the like the wedding planners and the florists and the nurseries and all of that, and they come and get their flowers, and then at 10 o'clock it opens to the public, and you can just go in. And it's just apparently the biggest. Go on YouTube, not right now, but go on YouTube, and because there's videos, and I loved it.
Yeah, and I love when you're reading something that's entertaining, but you also learn a little bit along the way. I had no idea that flower breeding, flower propagation was such a lucrative profession. I mean, if you breed the right flower, it can be a gold mine.
Yes, any kind of seed that can be a gold mine. Of course, the corporations are taking over. One of the things in the book that she talks about is that everybody's still trying to breed a blue rose. Yeah. It hasn't happened yet.
There's been claims to it, but I think it was purple rose, maybe, though. Was the
it's still the blue.
Yeah, they kind of ended that color.
The whole thing's fascinating.
Let's talk a little bit about your writing process, because that's evolved over the years, if I understand correctly. Do you just kind of sit down and wait for the news to hit? Do you know where it's going? I think at one point you even reverse engineered one of your books.
If you talk to Jane Francis, a friend of mine, you know this, and Susan Elizabeth Phillips, and they just sit down and start writing. If I did that, I would be frozen with fear. I have to have some sense of where I'm going. And so I do write a synopsis and get it approved. But the actual writing process has changed over the years. This is book 59, I'm pretty sure it is. And full length, and there's plenty of other stuff going on. And so I used to start with a synopsis and start at the beginning and write right through. And now then there was the book, which was Touch of Darkness. And I was writing on it, and I was on deadline. And I got to like page 50, and the hero and heroine were having a bunch of angst, and I didn't feel like writing that. So I thought, well, what do you want to write? Because you've got to keep moving ahead. I mean, you don't have a choice. You're on deadline. And so I thought, okay, I know what happens at the end. And so I wrote the end of the book, I went to the climax and I wrote that. And then I thought, okay, I still don't want to go back and write the angst, so I wrote all the way to the end of the book. And then I went kind of back from the climax a little bit and wrote into there. And then I finally, it was close enough that I could see light at the end of the tunnel, and I went back and to the hero and heroine, and I did their angst and caught the whole book together. And the thing that, you know, because I was just like, I'm a faker. Who ever heard of such a stupid thing as to do? And this was like book 48. And nobody ever said it. It's like she wrote it backwards. Nobody ever noticed. And so this is the point in which I really did get a lot wilder than I used to be. What I've been doing in the last books was I write the beginning because I always know exactly what's going on. And I get to about a third and then I'm floundering. And so now I go and write the end every time. And it always frees up everything, reminds me of everything I need to put in the middle. And I'm able to write from there. And it works really well for me, I have to say. I'm quite enthralled.
Yeah, they're very cinematic in their pacing and sense of flow. How do you keep track of
things in Gothic, because you have a lot of unique secondary characters. There's your humorous stores in the area. And I mean, I'm guessing if you're doing a series or whatever you want to call it, that either you have a great memory or you have to write things down, or how does it work?
We only have two books so far, John, so far my memory's doing okay.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing that happened on Facebook, I said, if you're in a little tourist town, where do you shop? And people just came in and told me, you need a Christmas tea shop, you need a gift shop, you need, you know, and they gave me, and a magic shop. This is going to be in Gothic for sure. And mystical type thing. They told me everything, so I'm like taking notes like crazy. I've got all kinds of stuff with that. And that's what is in Gothic. It's what my readers told me to put in there. So that was fun too. They're very, people are so inventive. I mean, yeah. People just, you know, they're so funny.
They're helpful. And in Forget What You Know, there's also Birch.
Oh yes, they're having, it was kind of like, I have to do, it's a tourist town, and I had to do something in the way, like festivals, how are they going to bring tourists in? So that's what they're doing.
So that the killer can sneak in without...
Yeah, exactly. But that's a lot of fun too. I have my character who owns the town, basically, who is... I'm based on Martha Stewart. I really admire her. I'm not
the good or the bad Martha Stewart.
No, the good part. I just, well, you know, she.
Martha, we love you if you're out there.
Yeah. I admire her so much. What a brilliant woman. Her and Oprah are just like fabulous business people and such successful women, and we all know that's really hard to do. And so, yeah. I really do admire her, and that's what I base Angelica on, and she's quite the character, and she's really a driving force in the town.
What about your relationship with editors? Because that's always interesting to see how an author works with editors.
Depends on the editor.
Okay.
it does depend on the editor. I've only had two editors that were very difficult for me, and I've had 12. Editors, for the most part, they're just wonderful people. You don't have to get along all the time, as long as they are very smart about what they edit. I'm perfectly willing to put up with personality issues, as long as they are good at the
editing. Do you want them to give you more like plotting kind of overall advice?
Oh, I have definitely called the editors and say I'm in trouble here. We have to get this book together. What have you got any ideas? They're very good at brainstorming.
Versus like the
nitty
gritty, like yeah. You know, shift this sentence here.
When I wrote Virtue Falls, because that was my first suspense, and it's 140,000 words, my editor was really in there punching and kicking, and she was very helpful, because by the time I got done with that many words, I was...
You can't see the forest
from
the trees.
I couldn't see the forest from the trees, yeah. And so she was very, very helpful. Yeah.
Which brings us to another point that, in your fascinating persona, for somebody that writes such intense, dark, and sometimes very scary books, you're a big old chicken, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
Do you scare yourself when you're writing these things?
Yes,
do
I
you
do.
Have to stop?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. I remember when I wrote the first scene in Virtue Falls, it's this one spooky little scene, and I had to like write a few pages, and then I'd go and skip ahead, and I'd write some, you know, like normal relationship type stuff, and then I'd go back and I'd write some more. It really, it takes a lot of work. I've always said I love Dracula. I think Dracula is one of those fascinating characters in fiction, but I don't believe in vampires, really. And I do believe in serial killers, and so that's where you tip me over the edge right there.
Yeah, if a writer is good, they can make you believe anything, because you're right. I don't believe in the supernatural, but Riley Sager wrote a book.
Yes.
Called Lock Every Door.
Yes.
And I was reading it at 10 o'clock at night in a house that was dark except for the kitchen. And it's about things happening in an apartment building. I see this white flutter along the corner of my vision. I'm thinking, oh my God, there are ghosts. How fast can I get out of the house and into the street? And then I took a minute and I realized the air conditioning had kicked on and the blinds were okay. But a writer can do that to you.
Yeah,
and you do that because you suck them into that kind of intense race and
And sure. You know, it's when you're, it's the characters, their reactions that are, that's pulling people in. You can make the reader walk in the person's shoes. That is where it's at. That is where you're going to be successful. And that's what I'm really work hard at. It's what I'm good at. Characterization is what I'm good at, in my opinion. And plotting, I need a lot of help with plot. Jane and I call each other a lot and say, we're stuck! I'm stuck!
Let's talk a little bit about, there's this whole concept of an author's brand that's come up in the recent last 10 years or so. I like to call it the author's voice, how they tell a story. You're kind of a challenge because you don't write the same type of book. You kind of veer off in different directions where you're...
I wish I would stop.
But how would you, for someone who's never read Christina Dodd's books, how would you describe to that reader?
Okay, every book that I've written, historical romance, contemporary romance, suspense, paranormal, they always have suspense in the, so there you go. What I write is suspense with humor. Mm-hmm. And
the romance component can vary from
yes,
book to book.
The romance does vary. Albinoli in the suspense, you know, if we're labeling it as romance, it's certainly romance centric.
But you always have some romance, I've seen.
Yes,
in kind of your books. Yeah,
I like relationships. I like, to me, watching a man and a woman, or men and men, or women and women, but I've never done that. Mm-hmm. Try to get together and have a permanent relationship. It's just funny. I'm sorry. You know, there's so much involved in it. I've been married since years, cross cooled, and I know this. And you just keep on going.
What has surprised you the most about the business of publishing over your long tenure as a writer?
Well, what happened with self-publishing has been fascinating and a good thing. I mean, we really have gotten some great voices out there that are self-published. Before, it was so hard to get into the business, and I think that we lost a lot of wonderful authors because they were rejected so much. Not everybody can afford. Not everybody has a husband who's going to support them for 10 years and can keep writing and trying to get published and know that you might never be published, and that's one of those things. I've said for years, if you're a writer, you better like the writing, because it's not... Moments like this are rare. You don't get the limelight. You're alone in a room by yourself talking to imaginary people. And you better like what you're doing. And, you know, sometimes books don't do well. And you get on to Candle in the Window, my first book, won so many awards and just got a lot of acclaim. And if you go on Amazon, there's plenty of 5-star reviews there, but there's also plenty of 1-star reviews. And so you just have to be braced for this stuff. It's just an opinion. You have to live with that. And just keep writing. You're not writing for the person that hates your book. You're writing for the ones that love them.
I think that's very smart. I also think that you can't write to trends as a writer.
No.
And that's why you kind of do what you want to do. But every once in a while, like the Gothic series is in a way on trend because it's got that whole, as Jane said, spooky supernatural Gothic vibe going. I mean, I even thought you were naming the town just kind of as your little wink at the whole thing.
It is a little bit of a wink, but at the same time, it's... I've always written ghosts and stuff. I don't know. I just thought that it was good fiction. So
you're not only a writer, but you're also a reader. What have you read that you would like to share with other people? What are the books that you're looking forward to? What can you tell us about Christina Dodd as a reader?
Right now, I of course, one of the reasons I wrote historical romance is because I love reading research books. And right now I'm reading Da Vinci's Kitchen, which is the history of Italian cuisine. And it's very interesting. Well, I mean, it's just like Flower Confidential. You never know when you're going to find something that really speaks to you. And that's that kind of why they read that goes on. And then I understand that an author named Jane Prince has a book coming out in a month that's kind of bright or bright. Actually, it's a magic book.
I think she's a new author, so people might be familiar with her. The Bride or White is the book.
And you've read it.
I've actually read it. It's quite good. It's no Christina Dodd, but
yeah,
it's good.
But she's tried so hard. I actually, you know, Jayna Krentz writes in three names, Amanda Quick and Jane Castle and Jayna Krentz. And my favorites are the Jane Castle. And this last, Jane Castle was wonderful. It's called Sweetwater of the Rich. I really, truly love that.
Yeah, she's like you, Jane, under whatever persona she adopts, is very consistent. So if you like one of her books, you usually will like all of her different things. Mm-hmm. Just like, I'm not a big paranormal romance reader, but I loved your paranormal romances.
Oh,
that's never done anything for me, but there's millions of great writers that do that.
And those are, without a doubt, my most popular books. They just, you know, people just love them. And that was great. Darkness Chosen was a great series.
Yeah.
That's the book. Those are the books I send people to if they've never read me. Read the Darkness Chosen.
What advice would you give to aspiring writers? You talked a little bit about it, but what do you wish someone had told you that when you were starting as a writer?
Oh, basically what I said is that you better like the job.
Yeah.
You better enjoy what you're doing. It's just a lot of work, and it's not always rewarding, and sometimes books don't go well, and sometimes somebody in your family dies, or you know, you have a kid that's in trouble or something like that, and you still got to try and produce the books. For me, when there's troubles, it is someplace to go where I have control. And that's a nice thing, but people have to find out this stuff for themselves. If you're wanting to write, it's a tough job. But also, I know at the beginning what I was thinking was, how am I ever going to continue with a career? How do people actually keep doing it for years and years and years? And I don't, you know, you just, as long as you read other books and you know, watch anything and observe people, there's so many plots. I'll never have time to write as many plots as I've got. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that you write pretty much a certain number of books a year? Does that vary? Does your production level remain consistent?
No, the production level is not consistent at all. it depends on... one of the reasons I've switched genres so often, which is like death to a herd, you should never do that. I mean, don't die. There's the other thing. I'm a published writer. Stick with one thing.
Stick with one name and don't change genres.
Don't change genres. But to me, the one reason I've been able to do it for so long is because I kind of get bored with one and I think, well, I could go do this. And so I go off and do this, which is entirely different and completely challenging, and I really enjoy myself. And then sometimes I go back to the first one, because by then I'm feeling really good about the old ones. And you know, so it's been me wandering through life doing whatever I wanted and for various reasons, but it's kept me fresh. I really enjoy the writing.
I think that's...
it's been 32 years.
I know. It's not the years, it's the mileage.
Yeah.
But... I think that's smart on your part as a writer, because you can tell when a writer gets
stale.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And but it's also a challenge, because you're not, readers sometimes want
exactly the
same
thing over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes that doesn't happen. I forgot my next question. So.
I know. But no, I always agree. I like the same thing over and over again from an author too. But as long as I like the characters, I can follow them anywhere.
Yes, it's that kind of eternal dilemma. You want something familiar and comfortable, but you want something fresh and new,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Or as they say, tall yet short, or young yet old. But yeah, that's
pink and or black.
Yeah. Now I remembered a little bit about how much input. I know some readers are fascinated by how the book gets to the marketplace in terms of the title, the cover, all that stuff, and how much input an author actually has.
Input on covers and titles depends on the publishing house you're at.
Okay.
And if you're self-published, you can do whatever you want, and that's fine. But, you know, you're really trying to trip people up. I was, John, we've got Murder Your Employer over there. I'm going, why didn't I think of that? That's the best title in the entire world. And it's volume one. You know, I mean, people are buying it because they think it's a how-to manual. but So yeah, I HQN is a very by committee publishing company, and so I don't really have much input about anything. The editor picked this title out of my synopsis, so that was fine. I thought it would be fine, but I didn't realize I'd forget it all the time. And then the covers, I have very little input. I just have it. Basically, they're now getting to the point where they're asking me different color schemes and stuff like that, and I appreciate that. This would be had three different color schemes, and I got to vote on that and be the deciding vote.
Look, I had no idea that there were like trends and colors for book jackets.
Yes.
Like sometimes it's pink, you know, for 3 years, or yellow, or
John, you need to go to a grocery store and look at the book section. It's like, I can't see my book. It's right here.
There you go. Well, that part I do understand, because I think the statistic is you have like 13 seconds to capture a reader's attention
yeah.
when the book is on the shelf, and if the cover and the title don't do it, they're going to walk right by and miss your book. So that is very important.
Yes.
John, I have an online question from somebody.
Okay.
I think it was the budding writer that we were talking about a few minutes ago, this Jane Ann Krentz.
No questions.
She has a question for both of you. She says, Christina, what do you see as your core story? And John, as a reviewer, what do you see as her core story?
Okay. Horror?
Core.
Core.
This is going to be like a three of armed women. Or three
I was like, oh no, Jane, why would you do that? Core story. Oh, I just, my core story is almost pretty consistently that the good guys win at the end. And I like to set up people, and especially women, into the most difficult possible situations and have them fight their way out of it. I think it's very important, just as one of those things that women need to see in everybody. You know, you're writing books to people who are sitting in the worst circumstances. People have said, you got me through the childbirth. You got me through the sitting in the waiting room.
Loved one.
The emergency room. Whatever. So you really are trying to write to people who need some hope, and that's So somebody once said about my heroines, I wish she didn't make them get so hurt all the time, but I really do want them to come up from a lot of pain and a lot of agony and a lot of poverty, and I'd like to see them succeed.
You really do write strong female characters. And
my mother. It was my mother.
Probably blanking on the one book where the woman is abused and she's escaping that, and her husband is after her.
The woman who couldn't scream?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you show that even people who, even ordinary women, people we all know from church, school, whatever, they have that within them to be the hero of their heroine of their own story.
Of their own story, exactly right. I've told this story before. My mother was pregnant with me. My father died suddenly of a heart attack. She had my two sisters who were 9 and 11. She was a housewife, for Pete's sakes. She didn't have a job. And I was raised on Social Security. When I was six, she went out, she got a job, and then from then on, we were, my sister's married, considered a lot of men, and we were together, and it was a tough life, and she was scared to death all the time. I mean, I know she was. It was just terrifying, and she raised me, and we got through it, and I just admire that kind of grit, and I saw it from the time I was an infant, and I know it's there. I know it's out there, and I know we can all dig it out of ourselves eventually. Sometimes it's not easy.
What I see is you, I'm going to call it James's core story, but I call it your voice, your literary voice. There's intensity to your writing. It can be emotional intensity. It can be suspense, intense suspense, intense danger. It's not throughout the book. Stories. You have a sense of humor to you. I like to think it's kind of snarky, but in a good way, as opposed to the bad way. And that's what I like, in a writer. If that's there, then I'll follow them wherever they go. The other thing about you that I think we said before, but I'll repeat it because I have no memory, you're both consistent in the quality of your writing, but you're also willing to take a chance. You're inventive. I mean, I don't always know what I'm getting when I pick up your books. I know I'm going to like it, but it could, I mean, like the paranormal ones, I'm like, why the hell am I reading about these weird Russian
shapeshifters?
Yes. Like, that's not what I read. And bring back the historicals that I know you for, Christina. But yeah, so inventive, intense.
Well, thank you.
And yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think I'll have you cut a clip of that one for me.
Oh, you'll have to run it by Barbara first. She maintains all the rights.
I'll just sit there and listen myself. I don't know if I put it on the screen.
Let's talk about marketing, because rumor has it that you're quite good at marketing, and authors more and more have to do that because publishers are shifting that over to them. So what is it like marketing your books? What tips do you have for authors, aspiring authors? What works for you?
If I was going to say anything that really works in publishing, it is frequency of publication. If you are writing books, I suggest you write them as fast as possible and to hell with social media. Having said that, of course, I do have social media. I'm on TikTok, I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Instagram. But I have an assistant to do it because it's just so much time. And I occasionally come up with brilliant ideas for posts. This morning, I put up a simply dreadful picture of myself in crawfish gear from the crawfish feed we had, my daughter did yesterday, and said, you know, I'm going to wear this today. And then I said, no, I'm kidding. But we have people here because I did that.
So willingness to embarrass yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll do anything. I don't. Dignity is overrated. I just want to make people. I do like to make people laugh. That is true.
That is true.
I really do. And I'd rather be laughing at myself, too, as opposed to having people laugh at me.
Yeah.
We all know that one.
What's next for you as an author, Kim, if you want to share, or if you can share?
Absolutely. I have two books already written, and one of them is sold, and it will be out in 2024, and I think the latter part of 2024, sorry.
Wow.
I am calling it Never Go Home Again, and it is set down the coast from Gothic, and I have to say, I hope you like it, because I mean, I think it's just one of the best things I've ever done. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm not even going to try and keep it. It's
one of those all over the place kind of plots.
No, it's actually, that's one of the ones where I actually started here and went straight. I'm really proud of it. I was just like, I know what I'm doing right from the beginning. That's a very rare thing. For me to see the path clear all the way through, that's very rare. And to me, I think it makes it a really great book. And this one I think is just wonderful. I got to the middle and I got a surprise myself, and it doubled the book. I'm very excited. But it is called Never Go Home Again, but the publisher has not approved the title either. So.
And there's another one after.
Please
that.
Sign up for my newsletter.
that's a valuable marketing tool.
Well, yes, the newsletter is the important thing because people know what's going on. I always tell everybody what's going on with the newsletter on Facebook or whatever. They'll show you a post and sir, you want another post, and then you say, well, I didn't know you got a new cover on that book. It's like, I told you. But, you know, unless you're on the newsletter, you just, you know.
And in fact, you reveal valuable information like recipes.
Yes, I do. Yes. Would you like to talk about your version of that?
Well, in the book, there is a certain resident of Gothic that's famous for her
cheese crackers.
Mrs. Claus's cheese crackers, is that it? Yeah. So I thought, well
it's Mrs. Santa's.
Mrs. Santa's. I told you I had my memory.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Well, obviously, I was agreeing with you until.
I thought it would be fun to do that for your event here at the store. So I searched on your website and could not find anything, and in frustration, found a different recipe. I'm calling it Mrs. Claus's with a K, cheese crackers. But you have the recipe now that you're sharing.
It is on the website. I tested
it
a lot. I had three different recipes before I landed on the right one. You would think I would have been smart enough to go to the Southern Living Cookbook first off, because that's where, you know, that's where cheese crackers are famous. In the South, and they're wonderful. I mean, I'm sorry, they're just wonderful. And I thought they'd be easy to make, and they were not. I mean, once I got the right recipe, they were. But
and you're pretty much known for cooking too, so it's
yes, but I'm not as good. You're the baker. I don't know. But yeah, I definitely cook.
book that's coming in 2024, is that because publishing is still log jammed with stuff, or is that just the way publishing works? It's like I want to write to somebody and say, no, move it forward. But
they are moving me to hardcover, and so that's going to be what the delight's about. They're going to try and position it into this spot.
Because contrary to popular belief, you're not the only author in the world.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And what they're going to have, because I'm going back into hardcover again, they're going to have to do some jiggling with bookstores and Target and all those guys.
I guess it's better to kind of do more advanced planning than to throw it out there and not have the support.
Yeah, no, no. I told them, because they were talking about early 2024, and I said, listen, I just want you to do it right, because I really do like this book.
So sign up for Christina's newsletter so you know when it's coming out.
ChristinaDawn.com.
And now I remember the question I had that I've forgotten. Because you've written so much, books go out of print, you sometimes get the rights back, is that correct? Or have you been republishing some of your things?
I have the Lost Hearts books, I have the ebook rights back, and those I am self-publishing, but most of the stuff that I self-publish are my short stories and my novels.
Okay.
So, but because I actually don't go out of print very much, and the only reason I have the ebooks is because I they wrote that contract when ebooks were just coming in, and they kind of flubbed it, and they left the door open, and I got it. It helps to have a daughter who's been in law school, so she reads the contracts and tells me.
Is that a different experience, self-publishing?
It's a lot of work. I know self-publishing people. We have them right here. And what's your name?
Arlene. Hittele.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know you.
You do.
No, but I had to have the name first.
Yes.
It's just so much work. I mean, you should be talking to her. We have friends that are self-publishing. Oh my God, the things you have to do. It's. Mm-hmm. I just don't have the energy. If I was 40.
What, that was about 10 years ago?
Yeah, that was about 10 years ago.
Okay. You should probably let people have a chance to ask any questions they might have before you have signed books. Do we have questions from the audience?
So, Christina, I actually have one. I was a huge fan of The Wrong Alibi, which took place in Alaska.
Right.
So what did you have to learn about survivorship and survivability in the Alaskan wilderness to write that book?
Did you ever see the Alaska Patrolman series?
No.
You should get it.
Okay.
Truly, that was where I, because it's the Wild West out there, guys. It was quite the, I'm not a reality show person, but it was, I can't remember what it's called exactly, Alaska Patrol, something like
okay.
that.
Alaska State Troopers.
Something like that. That was truly. I got that, and I started watching, and I was like, "Holy smokes!" But when I was a kid, we had friends who, our next door neighbors, who moved to Alaska, mm-hmm. and so I had background there too. A lot of family still up there, so there, I knew a lot from them.
We chose it as our summer book club book, so thank you.
It was cold.
the first
chapter in that one I didn't have to quit writing on that one because it wasn't scary exactly, but it was
exhausting.
Yeah, it was exhausting. That's a harsh book.
Well, Alaska is a place that people go to escape because it is like a frontier. And we'll give a shout out to local author Paige Shelton.
Yes,
a fabulous
she did it
series.
Too.
Yeah,
she did a fabulous series on the Southern Alaska. Still ongoing, I think.
Yes, third book was published in December, and yeah. I'm guessing another one's coming.
It's a fascinating place and very gritty, and mm-hmm. it's very cold and it's very dark.
Yeah,
we live in Washington State, and it's very cold and very dark there too. Not as cold, but darn dark. So it was a tough book to write the letter.
Yeah. Other questions for Christina?
Make something up. What's your middle name?
Lee. How does the TikTok thing
you do the TikTok stuff, and then some of them work and some of them don't, and I never have any idea what. I did a reading out of this book, and I put it up, and it got like 87 views. And then my daughter Arwen had grown this tomato that had two little sections like this, and then I have a makeup sponge that's like that. And so I did a video that said, which of this is on my makeup sponge? And it got 250 views. I mean, I've got no idea how to do this stuff. I did one video where I was describing, I think it was Witcher Falls, where I was saying, I'm the character and you know, did this thing, got 50,000 views. Most of the time, like I say, 80 wow. views, 250 views. I don't know. I just keep plugging away.
And is it true that you and Gina and Krantz almost got arrested doing one of those videos?
No. That was my husband moaning. I don't know. I think we've lost all our sense. Jane said there's this new statue at this new building, and we should go take pictures and videos of us, our books, you know, with our books. And I'm like, oh, yeah, great idea. So she stands in front of him. She did her video and, you know, got it in less than 15 seconds of getting us. And then we're trying to figure out something for me to do. And there was this bench that's up like here. We're going, why is the bench up so high? This is such a dumb design feature. Who would do such a thing? And I said, well, okay, I'll just get up on the bench and I'll crawl along and pick up the book and say, you know, it was point messy. And so I get up and I'm crawling along the bench, and we thought the building was empty. This guy comes projecting out of the door, and he's yelling, that's not a bench! But on the video, it doesn't say like that. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like he's calling me a name. So if you watch the video, there's me crawling along, and there's this guy shouting in the background, and Jane, God bless her, kept filming.
And Jane says, sure, blame that incident on me.
and then, you know, I hopped down and then we walking back and just laughing our asses off. And then I sat down and went, well, this would be a great newsletter. So I said, writing the newsletter, I thought, my God, we're idiots. What are we? We could have been arrested. I mean,
so if it wasn't a bench, what was it?
Oh, it was you were supposed to stand there. It was an office building, so if you went out in the patio, you would be able to stand there with your coffee or your lunch.
But you and Jane are petite, so it didn't occur to you it was a table.
No, it was just, but we're fine. Never arrested.
One of our audience members would like to know, who's your all-time favorite author? Do you have any favorite authors?
Georgette Ayer.
Yeah, Georgette Ayer, probably. That I've certainly done very well by her books. And I'm sorry, I've been reading Jane. I know I've talked about Jane all the time. I've been reading her for 40 years, way before we were friends. I loved her books. And she has many names, as you all know. I like a little bit of historical. The Deanna Raywards are really good right now. You've given me quite a few. John Sundry's done this
year. Love and Saffron.
Oh yeah, I loved Love and Saffron. Yeah. That was a lovely book. Mm-hmm. That was not a scary book. That was just—it's a lovely book.
Mm-hmm. You need to balance it out.
Didn't you just read the Seven Husbands of
The Seven Husbands of
Evelyn Hugo.
That was this is not my kind of book at all.
Yeah.
Did you read it?
No, but I've added it to my list when you recommended it.
Yeah, I really, it's a Hollywood book. It's not my kind of thing at all.
You're not a Hollywood kind of reader?
No, I'm not.
Really?
No, okay. Never occurs to me to even think of that.
Right, we can't be friends.
This is the last interview.
Different tastes for different readers.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, it's really, I think it's entertaining no matter what. And it has a small mystery in it. That wasn't what entertained me. It was all the seven husbands.
And the story of that.
It was great.
Questions from
nobody else online.
Okay. Then we're good. I'd like to thank everyone for attending this event here and those online for joining another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. We'd especially like to thank Christina for joining us today and for writing such wonderfully entertaining books.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.